This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
No, it was not actually a blue moon that we were concerned with. In fact, it was more of a moon shadow, I think you might say. But, well, Mr. Malone was not about to start the show with that song. I tried to suggest it, but he torpedoed the idea. No, it was in fact a moon shadow racing over the Earth on the 8th of April of this year that yours truly was down to check out in Mazatlan, Mexico. And having done so, I think it's now my duty to report on what we found. Now, because yours truly does have in his possession a 50-year summary of eclipses of both the sun and the moon, I was aware from a long time ago that this eclipse was coming in 2024, and then that a really good place to see it would be Mazatlan. Now, in the wake of the eclipse back in 2017, passing right across the U.S. of A. from Oregon to South Carolina, a lot of people got turned on to the joys of observing this magnificent spectacle in the sky. And as luck would have it, this eclipse traversed North America from Mazatlan up to, I think, Newfoundland. But of course, all observing points are not created equal. It is to one's advantage to be closer to the equator because the Earth is moving faster there. It is certainly to one's advantage to be in an area that is dry and less likely to have clouds. So it was that the weather forecasts for Mexico were quite a bit better than the weather forecasts for Canada, with the U.S. being somewhere in between. Statistically speaking, the odds of seeing the eclipse were best in the Mexican city of Torreón, which had something like a 20% history of cloud cover on this date. Now, Mazatlan, most people mispronounce it, and I have for years. The weather forecast in Mazatlan was something like 22% chance of cloud cover. Torreón also was a little bit closer to the point of maximum eclipse, but the difference between the coast and inland was something like 15 seconds. No big deal. This eclipse was slated to last 4.5 minutes at maximum. In Mazatlan, it was a little less, something like 4 minutes and 15 seconds. But as eclipses go, that's pretty good. The Oregon eclipse, by comparison, was only a 2-minuter. Now, there's a lot to say about this eclipse, and there's a lot to say about travel. We've been big advocates for travel on this program. We think it's sort of a liberating experience and an educational experience for people to get out and look at the rest of the world. The saying I always like is that it's hard to see the picture when you're inside the frame. And so too, the people that I'm sure some of you know, that I certainly do know, that have never left the United States of America, know less about the United States of America than they otherwise would, to their disadvantage. I think before we talk at length about eclipse, I want to talk a bit about travel itself, because that has changed over the years. Several years back on this program, we had our favorite travel agent on the show to talk about what he does and how it's done. And in the interim, travel agency has fallen on hard times. Travel agents have fallen on hard times. And because of the internet, people are booking things themselves, which, of course, airlines and hotels and resorts, etc., don't mind because they don't have to hire people to answer the phones. However, this has its drawbacks, which we will outline shortly. Anyway, by way of plugs, we do want to mention Volaris Airlines, which in our case transported us from Tijuana down to Mazatlan. I mentioned Volaris specifically because I wish to warn you that if you have the opportunity to fly this airline, you should, by all means, reconsider. Now, as it happens, my girlfriend and I had booked a flight from TJ to Mazatlan because flights direct from the United States were pretty much booked up by then. Our bad. But we did have a flight down and a flight back booked well in advance. We thought 6 months in advance. But a few days before it was time to depart, an email was received from the good people at Volaris announcing that they were changing the flight from the Friday before the eclipse, and instead of it being a direct flight, one would now have to fly from Tijuana to León, and then León to Mazatlan. An annoyance. We would have much preferred a direct flight, of course, but it wasn't such a big deal. Now, luckily for us, they then changed the flight again, and now told us we'd be flying at 6 a.m. On closer inspection, we realized, to our horror, that this was not 6 a.m., on Friday, but 6 a.m. on Saturday. We had not noticed that this idea of changing it from one flight to two also involved moving it a day back. Now, the website for this airline is terrible. I suppose if you have an app, it might work better. I don't know. I'm not putting an app on my phone for an airline. But we were able to reach a human being. And what happens when you actually reach a human being is that one human being to another human being, you can usually resolve the problems quickly. I'm leaving out the fact that we were amazed to note from independent checking that this flight that took you down directly on Friday was not yet full and therefore was still available. It was leaving at 7:45 instead of the 9 o'clock original flight, but I don't know whether they have some kind of crazy algorithm that tells them that if you move the flight earlier, well, the customer may not be able to make that flight. So your solution is give them a later flight. Might be a day later. Might be 3 days later, but give them a later flight. But happily, thanks to reaching a human being who was very nice, we were able to get on the flight we wanted. There is also a service called CBX, which is a new thing, relatively new thing, where you can basically go down to San Diego, south of San Diego, cross the border, and find yourself smack dab in the middle of the airport in Tijuana. This worked pretty well. It also worked pretty seamlessly on the way back, which, you know, involved almost no time coming through customs. But in the meantime, we had to get that flight back, and therein lies a tale. I took down with me some printout, I think it was from Expedia, outlining the return flight. And the night before, we were supposed to fly out at noon. We could not figure out why it was. The paperwork showed that we would fly back from noon to 1:20 p.m., meaning that we would fly back in an hour and 20 minutes. This seemed problematic since the flight takes normally 2 hours and 20 minutes. Try as we might, we could not figure out how that could be with a confusion over standard time or save daylight savings time or Pacific time or mountain time. None of it made sense. And on closer inspection, we found out, oh, what do you know? We got an email from Volaris that we didn't notice 2 days before. They were moving our flight from a return on a Thursday to a return on a Sunday, as if that was a perfectly good substitution. So down in Mexico, fumbling with a cell phone, we tried to correct this by reaching a human being, which we were fairly confident would solve the issue. But we couldn't get anybody on the line. Couldn't get the website to work. The website is notoriously bad, keeps kicking you off. I know this from not just our experience, from that of others. And the solution seemed to be to go down to the lobby and talk to a human being down there to see if that human being could put us on the phone to make the call that would get us another human being at the airline. And what do you know? That worked. However, it was a bad connection. It was someone that spoke very softly and badly and didn't speak good English, and our Spanish was not perfect. And it seemed as though they were able to correct this by getting us on a flight the next day, which is still available. And no, we couldn't figure out why it was if you're going to bump us off a flight on a Thursday. They wouldn't have concluded that sending you out on a Friday would be the next best thing. But in fact, they had not figured that out. Now, being the technophobe that I am, I had no confidence whatsoever that whatever code they were going to send us for our phone was going to work. I said, I'm going to the airport tomorrow morning to get a boarding pass that I can hold in my hand. So when my friends Roger and Holly took their taxi ride to the airport, they were also flying out at noon, only in their case, they actually were. I went up to the Volaris desk, asked them why it was we were not on the flight today, and they said, well, it was overbooked. She did, however, within about 2 minutes of effort, hand me two paper boarding passes.
No hotel voucher for the night?
Not only no hotel voucher for the night, the fact of the matter is the flight on Friday was originally much cheaper than the flight on Thursday, meaning we should have had some kind of rebate there, and that was not coming our way either.
Yikes.
And hold on, it gets worse. Now, having an extra day in Mazatlan was not such a bad thing. The hotel was still available to us. We stayed in the same room, and there were still a couple friends down there horsing around. So, you know, wasn't a bad day. Except, of course, for the banda music, which I'll have more to say momentarily. Anyway, the next day, we got to the airport and discovered that Volaris wanted to charge us now an extra $120 after weighing our baggage, even though there was no problem going down. So all in all, the extra money this was costing was, in the end, more than the actual flight cost. And you tally up the difference between flights, getting no hotel voucher, and spending $120 extra dollars for baggage. In sum, I would reiterate, if you're thinking about flying Volaris Airlines, please do yourself a favor and rethink it. Now, I will confess that Mazatlan is not my favorite city in Mexico, but I would say that after this last trip, I appreciated it more than I had previously. There are some nice attractions. They've got a new aquarium. I think we would have all enjoyed the aquarium if it didn't have a crowd in it like Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Did you visit the house where they captured El Chapo?
We, in fact, did drive by the hotel in which El Chapo was captured. I believe he was taken without incident. You know, at some point in the future, we gotta go over that whole story, because when you put a drug lord in prison and he escapes from the prison on a subway that was built underneath his prison cell, complete with a motorcycle device that allowed him to move down the tunnel with great rapidity, well, that's a pretty interesting story. By the way, a lot of people counseled against going down to Mazatlan. I think that the State Department has like a level 4 warning on it. But I was surprised at the fact when I visited last year, as preparatory to this year's trip, that in fact the drug lords down in Sinaloa have purchased a large number of the hotels and want to make sure that there's no problems with the tourist industry. I mean, I think they know a cash cow when they see it. Of course, you do have to wonder what the hell happened to Acapulco, which back in the 60s, I think as late as the 70s, was a jet-setter destination. And now, I don't think anybody goes there who's not a Mexican citizen. This came about after gunplay in the streets of Acapulco, with one drug faction fighting another narco-trafficante faction. Anyway, hasn't happened in Mazatlan, and I think never will. Therefore, on the one hand, I could say that there's no reason that I will not return to Mazatlan someday. But, in fact, there is. Although there's some aspects of the area and the town, and in some cases the food, that are quite meritorious, I'm pretty sure I'm never going to go back. And the reason I'm never going to go back is banda music. Now, before I start lobbing grenades at this genre of music called banda, Mr. Millen has pointed out that, you know, that if you go on the web, you can actually find some studio recordings of it that are not too bad. For example, to which I concede the point. With excellent musicians and good sound mixing, it's not too bad. But I can assure you, that is not what you find on the beaches of Mazatlan. Before I enrich your lives with an example, let me quote from a piece that was in The Guardian about banda music in Mazatlan. This was a piece that came out just before the eclipse. Noted The Guardian, bands who play the thumping tuba and drum songs of northern Mexico on beaches in the resort city of Mazatlan appear to have emerged victorious this week after noise complaints had threatened to silence them. And by the way, among all the people I was traveling with and anyone else I asked, noise complaints would be the appropriate description of the reaction to banda. But The Guardian continued, anyone who planned to witness the 8th April eclipse in a moment of awed silence will likely be disappointed. Mazatlan on the Pacific coast will be the first place in North America where the path of totality will be visible. Because of complaints from foreign tourists who like to observe the resort's sunsets in peace or with a bit of soft music, a local hotel owner had suggested limiting the time or places where the bands could play. The bands usually wandered the beaches asking for a few dollars per song to play, to which I would like to add, I never saw anybody giving them money.
Not even to go away?
Had we taken a collection to make them go away, I'm sure we would have done very well, noted the newspaper. Their music is hardly conducive to reflection or relaxation. Think of frantic, speed-fueled polka with lots and lots of brass and snare drum. We were trying to enjoy a meal in a restaurant that was adjacent to the beach when one of these invaders showed up, and it quickly grew impossible to converse. But back to The Guardian. After a protest march by the musicians turned into a violent scuffle with police last week, efforts to limit them appear to have been abandoned. President Andres Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, said the people are very conscious now, and they are defending their rights. This is how they make a living, and besides, this is a long-standing tradition, and for that reason, they protested and managed to get it reversed. López Obrador added, what isn't good is the violence. The Sinaloa bands, or the musicians of the Sinaloa bands, are completely within their rights to protest, just no violence. And apparently, videos of the scuffles between musicians and police went viral last week, with some band members hitting police with drumsticks. Drums were reportedly turned into weapons. Ruben Rocha, the governor of the northern state of Sinaloa, where Mazatlan is located, wrote in his social media account, I do not share the idea of prohibiting the musicians of Mazatlan from carrying out their honest, dignified work. To which I would add, you may want to throw the word honest around and get away with it, but if you call this music dignified, then I think you must be smoking something stronger than a Lucky Strike. Now, the issue came to a head when local hotel proprietor Ernesto Coppel posted a video urging that the bands be limited as to when or where they could offer to play. He said, they are a disaster on the beaches of Mazatlan. They don't allow people to rest. I have lots of complaints from hundreds of American tourists who say to me, I won't return to Mazatlan because of the noise. Which brings up the question of, is it music or is it noise? Well, you be the judge. Ms. McMillan, would you now please play a clip which was recorded on the beach two hotels down from the one I stayed in? We were worried when we just played this 20-second or so clip that you might reach out and change the station because, as one comedian pointed out, one of the fastest reflexes known in America is that reaching out and punching the button on your radio when you stumble upon a Mexican station. Now, I myself would not necessarily agree with that comedian, although I really detest the ranchero music, which you hear a lot on some of the stations that are Spanish language stations.
Musica romantica.
Perhaps to some ears, yes. I myself probably demonstrate faster reflexes when I hear rap or country, but that's just me. Frankly, I'm somewhat in awe of the fact that these bands are roving the beach, playing very, very badly. They're not good musicians, and they're not controlling their volume at all. They really reminded us nothing so much as, say, you know, a bratty bunch of high school kids who might, you know, be members of the band and one night take their instruments out to annoy a teacher they don't like. Although I would add that, you know, if there had been an out-and-out war in the streets of Mazatlan, I'm pretty sure the tourists would have sided with the police. My understanding is that this form of music sort of was a spin-off of mariachi after it sort of, I guess, hybridized with the military bands from Europe that came over in the late 1800s when European nations were trying to take over Mexico. I think France and Maximilian is a story known to some of you. It's actually another one we should look up and tell properly. My understanding in the very, very brief truncated version of the events was that France was trying to collect on debts that supposedly Mexico owed to them. They invaded through Veracruz and set up a puppet, knucklehead ruler of Mexico, to make sure things went their way, and I think he was overthrown by forces, I think including Benito Juarez, future Mexican president. And my understanding is the Mexicans were content to let him just leave quietly, but he decided, no, the people love me. I need to maintain my status as their ruler. I'm going to stick around. At which point I think Benito Juarez and others got fed up with him and just had him executed. But out of this heartwarming legacy, we not only have music such as banda, but also, my understanding is, the Mexican love of pastries. And I do have to validate that one of the best parts of the visit to Mexico were some of the pastry shops we visited. But alas, even the pastry will not get me returning to Sinaloa anytime soon, or probably ever.
What if the government bans banda?
Well, I don't think they will, but I would think about it. Of course, one thing you can say about banda is that if you are a quote-unquote musician and you're just not very talented, you may be able to find a niche for yourself on the beaches of Mazatlan. You know, I do have to note in closing that this kind of music, and they were like, I lost count of how many bands were roving the beaches of Mazatlan. And it's one thing to say this is our traditional music, and, you know, if you don't like it, go somewhere else. But the truth is, they're playing it to the tourists who don't like it. I can't figure this out. What's wrong with this picture? The tourists don't like it. There's not much to like about it, and yet it goes on, and somehow someone's earning money from it. I'm lost. I can't figure it out. I would note in closing that these bands reminded me nothing so much as the kind of things that used to be put out by Spike Jones. Of course, Spike Jones was doing it for the comedic effect. And I have to confess, we just tried to find a clip from Spike Jones that would illustrate the wackiness of it and how it compared to banda, but all of it sounded way too good. Anyway, back to eclipses themselves. Something we started off with at the beginning of this segment. Mr. Bill tells me that during the eclipse, Bill Maher got on the air and sort of asked, "What's the big deal? It gets dark, so what?" To which I would say, "That's right, Bill. You stay home and don't join the crowds." Well, it doesn't just get dark. And in fact, it never really gets completely dark like, you know, truly dark night. Because when you look at the horizon, you see kind of an orange glow where, you know, it's still daylight. And it is still daylight up to like the last, you know, fraction of a percent. And it actually, until the moon completely covers the sun, it's still basically daylight. But during that, in this case, 4 minutes, it's pretty interesting. You can see planets to the left of the moon, planets to the right of the moon. Although because we had a thin cloud cover, we could see Jupiter on the left, Venus on the right, but Mars and Saturn were hidden, and the comet, which apparently some people could see using binoculars, was also not available to us. The thin clouds did mask somewhat the sun's corona, but, you know, not really. It was so bright that it still did punch through, and there were prominences, orange prominences along the edge of the sun, which were incorrectly reported as solar flares by some news agencies. In fact, I do want to take a look at the film of the eclipse, because it seemed to me that you could see a change in the prominence that was kind of visible at 4 o'clock on the disc from our position. Yeah, there were a couple of orange blobs along the rim of the disc of the sun, or I guess the moon, since for 4 minutes they coincided. So yeah, orange prominences along the edge. I think they changed while we were watching. At least it seemed to me that they were, but I guess I better check the film. One of the most startling things about the entire trip and the entire eclipse. In fact, this is now my seventh eclipse. The first and only one I've seen from a boat. We decided that taking a boat out into the harbor near one of the three large islands offshore off the beach in Mazatlan was going to be a good idea. That's before we even factored in Banda music.
Good call.
Yeah, yeah. But taking the little trimaran out in the harbor was great. And of course, what people don't appreciate is that there's a show in the sky, quite an interesting show in the sky and in the landscape around for the 15 minutes before and after totality, when the lighting changes dramatically. My friend Roger developed the trick of putting one hand over the other at right angles and then creating a little disc from which you could see the crescent of the sun. And of course, a colander works that way. So does your hat. The hole in your hat, if you hold it down near the ground, the shadow is no longer a circle. It is now a crescent because that's what's in the sky, a crescent. The thing that amazed me above all else about this eclipse was that during the 4 minutes of totality, a truly spectacular event, which we travel thousands of miles to observe, a couple of locals who had been invited on our boat, a couple of locals who were 20-somethings, had both announced before the eclipse that they were not that interested in observing it per se, which they proved by looking at their phones during the 4 minutes of totality. There was a canopy over our boat, and we had the canopy halfway removed so we could have an unimpeded view of the sky. They preferred to remain under the still canopied part of the boat and look down at their phone. And no, I'm not sure what the hell it was they were looking at on their phone, but whatever it was more interesting to them than the show in the sky.
TikTok or Instagram, most likely.
Very possibly, I'm not sure. By rights, I think we should have thrown them overboard.
Yes.
Yeah, that sticks with me as the, without a doubt, the craziest thing that happened. Anyway, just thinking about that makes me need a break, so let's take one. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett, and we got a whole another half a show, which you need to stick around and hear, so do that.